Welcome to Wise and Nice, a true crime podcast with your hosts
Danny Armstrong
and Kelly Lee.
Please remember that we mean no disrespect to anyone mentioned in this episode or across any of the Wise and Nice platforms. We have an interest in true crime and related topics, and whilst we may offer our own personal views on certain items, it is meant to be educational and as light-hearted as possible. The information we present is collated from research gathered from the internet, and we reference and credit our sources wherever possible.
If you've liked what you've heard and want to join in with us, follow us on our socials, Instagram, Wives and Knives the Pod, Twitter, at Knives Wives, and Facebook, Wives and Knives Pod. We also have a little website where we post photographs and other information about the cases that we research. And this is wivesandknives.wixsite.com/my site.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Wives and Knives.
Hello everybody.
It's been a little while. We took a break due to technology related circumstances. And Kelly had COVID.
I did, yeah. We did plan to get back together a bit sooner than this, didn't we?
I know, but these things happen.
Yeah. But it's great to be back.
Yeah, and we'll be back for a short while, and then I think there's going to be a little break while I go on holiday.
Possibly. We have got one episode in the bank, which we recorded, but then couldn't edit, so...
We'll have to see how that pans out.
Yeah.
You know, it is the summer and these things happen.
Indeed.
Anyway, I hope you are all well and have been enjoying the beautiful weather we've been having. I am, definitely. It's been my birthday. I'm a grown up now, supposedly. I've had a lovely time. Yeah, just generally all is good.
Yeah, it was my birthday also. I got a lovely little present off you, didn't I? Which I still haven't shared on the socials, so I will. So yeah, that was great. You just have to wait and see. Hopefully you follow us.
So this week we are going to be covering a crime that is unsolved, and it's one of the first crimes that I heard of through podcasting. So I can't remember whether it was Crime Junkie or something. It was one that I used to listen to a lot when I first got into like listening to podcasts. And I think they pointed me towards an amazing, or I think it's amazing, podcast series called Down the Hill, which I thoroughly recommend. Like, just search it on wherever you're listening to us.
Yeah, it's great.
Because that breaks down this case over maybe 12 hours. Like, it's exceptionally long podcast, but in so much detail, it totally held my interest. And it was the kind of thing that... I'd start listening to it and I'd want to listen to it above everything else that I was doing that day. Like, I was so hooked and I wanted to speak about it, but then once you've heard something so bloody good, you're like, oh, I can't do it justice. Yeah. I've kind of got to the point where I'm like, you know, if you want an abridged overview in around sort of half an hour, 40, 50 minutes, then listen to me. If you want like the full on major detail, all the times and everything broken down to sort of minute by minute, then go listen to that one. Like, it's fucking incredible.
This is a taster session.
We don't always have to offer the same things, but if you haven't gathered, this is the Delphi murders. So it is the murder of Abby and Libby. Kelly, I know you'd heard of this case.
I have, yeah.
I know you know quite a bit about it, so feel free to chip in.
I'm feeling sleepy because we're recording it in the evening.
Yeah, this is completely out of our usual. Usually we're Sunday mornings.
Yeah.
Bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. And currently, I mean, we've had a takeaway. It's dark. It's been a very hot day.
It's pretty late.
It's very late.
We're not drunk this time.
Not at all.
So,
We've been on the appetizer.
Oh, yeah.
So, I'm going to start because... it's a truly like harrowing and horrific, and they're the same things really, but again, interesting case. So I hope that the people listening will too think it's interesting. So At 1:35 on Monday, February 13th, 2017, 13-year-old Abigail Joyce Williams, known as Abby, and her 14-year-old friend Liberty Rose Lynn German, Libby, were dropped off by Libby's older sister, called Kelsey German, on a country road. And this is sort of the area is 300 north east of Hoosier Heartland Highway. I often find like places in America, because we don't call our places like 300 North Road East.
No.
Like, it seems, I don't know if that means anything to anyone, but that's where it was. They were dropped off to go on a hike. So it was I've heard it referred to as like a snow day, but it wasn't snowy. It was just like a day off that was owed or some sort of way.
Like an insect day.
That's what I gathered it was. So we have insect days in the UK. It was like an insect day and it was really nice weather, and they decided that they'd go on this like little hike together. So the girls were hiking on the Monon High Bridge over Deer Creek, and this is like really remote woodland but a popular area. So yes, it was remote, but it wasn't so remote that you don't see other people there. Like a lot of people will travel to that. I'm thinking like the Lake District.
Yeah, I was thinking Scarfell Pike for some reason.
It's like a popular place for people to go, but in its sort of location it is remote. So Deer Creek Township is the area. So they're dropped off at 1:35, and at 2:07 p.m. Libby posts a photo of Abby walking along the bridge. So the high bridge is really like picturesque. It's a very long, thin bridge, very dramatic, very like Instagram worthy location. And she posts the picture of Abby walking on the bridge, and that is sort of the last confirmed sighting of the girls. They were reported missing at 5:30 p.m. after they failed to meet Liberty's father at 3:15. They'd arranged to be collected by Liberty's father, but they didn't show. So the families initially sort of searched for the girls themselves, which I assume you would. Like the 13, the 14, they might have sort of got carried away. Like you might be thinking, oh, we'll just push it half an hour, that kind of thing. But it isn't usual of them, so they are concerned enough to like start looking. But I'm going to backtrack a little bit and tell you about the things that led up to that day and who Abby and Libby are. And so they were best friends and have been for a long time. And like I said, this day was like a day off school, and they decided that they should go to this walking trail together, and it would be a really cool place for them to go. The bridge is like extremely high and narrow, dramatic location. So they're dropped off and they are taking photos, like they're posting on Snapchat and like obviously having a good time. Like it's a really nice place to go. So they didn't show up, and the family start looking for them, and when they can't find them sort of pretty much straight away, they contact the Carroll County Sheriff's Department. I'm not sure if it's Carroll or Carroll.
I'm not sure either.
I'm so sorry.
It's called Carroll.
The Carroll County Sheriff's Department, the Delphi Police Department, and the Fire Department. So they've got like
people
are looking for them, and people are taking this seriously. And they're also joined by the Department of Natural Resources to search for the missing girls. So you've got like sheriffs, police, like people who are
like mountain
rescue in the area and stuff like that. Like everyone is looking for them. And at this point, the girls' phones are just ringing out. So the families are thinking maybe they've fallen and they're hurt somewhere and they can't get to the phones. And so the evening draws on, and by 11:45, the search was actually called off because it just got too dark. And like I said, it's a remote place. It's not going to have particularly good lighting or anything like that. So the official search is called off, but obviously the families keep looking throughout the night for the missing girls. at 10 a.m. the following day, so we're now on Tuesday, February the 14th, 2017. The official search resumes, and it's 12:45 p.m. when the bodies of Libby and Abby are actually found. It wasn't announced, sort of, that it was them straight away, but the Delphi Fire Department do say that a discovery has been made, and this is not good. So, people...
Yeah, it's likely to be them, isn't it?
The girls were actually found quite close to where they were last seen in that, in the Snapchat photos and stuff like that. It was just like a little further along Deer Creek. The bodies of the two girls were actually just half a mile apart, and they were found on private land owned by a 70-year-old man called Ron Logan. Just like a FYI as well, despite the land being private, it was easily accessible by anyone that wanted to go on it. It was very close to public areas. It wasn't like someone's back garden, yeah, kind of private. It was just land. So on February the 15th, 2 days after the girls went missing and 1 day after their bodies were found, they were formally identified and autopsies were performed. The Indiana State Police released a photo of the man they believed was on the Delphi Historic Trail around the time that Abigail and Liberty went missing. They also announced that they wanted to speak to somebody who was parked near the bridge around that time. And the photo that the police were able to provide was, and I know you'll already knew this, it was actually taken from Libby's phone. So she had taken a picture of a stocky man walking with his hands in his pockets. Like, he was dressed up quite unusually for what we know was a warm day. Like, he's got a coat on, he's clearly like layered up. It is quite a fuzzy image. It looks like he's wearing a cap as well. So over the next few days, hundreds of investigators joined the search for Abby and Libby's killer, and a search warrant was issued to a home close by, and another search warrant was issued in a place called Bicycle Bridge Road that was quite close to the area as well, but no arrests were made. On February the 19th, the police decided to hold a press conference, during which they released audio, which was taken from Libby's cell phone, and they revealed that the initial still image was actually like a screenshot from a video. The police said that this man was the prime suspect for the murder, and they spoke about like Libby being a hero recording this man because it was the best clue they could have to find out who was walking after them, because it seems in this video that the girls are walking away from this man and he is walking towards them. The video is easily accessible online.
We'll put the links in the
show. Yeah, it's quite creepy to watch now, given the circumstances. It's only a few seconds long, and the man moves in quite sort of a distinctive way, and he's got quite a gruff voice, and he says, "Guys down the hill." To me, it isn't like hugely obvious what he's saying, but when you know, you can hear it.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. Also, like, this audio has been analysed by loads of professionals, so they are confident. He says, "Guys down the hill," and I can hear it now, I know what to look for. So there doesn't seem to be much question about what he is saying.
Yeah, definitely.
On February the 22nd, the FBI Major Case Contact Center in Washington reroute the tip line, so it's not like local anymore, this is like national, everyone's talking about it, news. And the FBI announced that they will be utilising 6,000 electronic billboards in 46 states to try and gather more information on the killer. So this is huge. Like, so many people are behind this. It's really getting the attention that you hope all cases like this would get. The local community as well are completely appalled by what has happened, because this is quite a close-knit community. And they gather together to light up Delphi is what they call it. So they all put like orange lights in their porch as a tribute to the girls.
Aww.
It's really touching, and you can see little videos of it and stuff, and it seems like quite a nice thing to do, and it's about the whole community sort of bonding together. Also, I feel like if you think you've got a killer in your midst, it's sort of a unity against the killer as well.
Yeah, definitely.
You get what I mean? So the community also managed to raise £96,000 in donation to use as a reward for any information that could lead to the case being cracked open. And on the 1st of March, a former Indianapolis man called if I'm pronouncing this wrong, I'm sorry, but you know what I'm like. Pat McPhee and another sort of like local businessman called Jim Ozzie donate £97,000 to the reward fund, and these donations, along with sort of the public donations, push the reward up to $200,000. And with all of this, you'd think that the case could be solved quite easily. It's got a lot of money behind it, a lot of attention, it's got a video, it's got an audio, like.
And that's just the evidence that's been released.
Exactly. Know? Like, there's so much that wasn't talked about, and exactly. The way that the police kind of drip fed the information about the video. So at first it was just, we went to speak to a man, and then it was like, this man, and then it was like, this is what he sounds like. So they're definitely being very formulaic and considerate over what they release and what they don't. And still to this day, it's a very much closed investigation in so much that
it makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. So I do think the police will know far more than is in the public domain. So the like video and the voice clip are circulated widely, and the police actually speak out saying that like they are adamant that they have the key to solving this case, and that it's in the local community, and they're expecting it to be solved soon. It's got this like, it's going to be cracked soon, we're working on this, urgency about it. On the 16th of March, the federal authorities execute a search warrant on the home of the man who owned the land where the two girls' body was found. So it's not surprising, really, like, that this is sort of an area of investigation they've looked into. So this property owner is Ron Logan, and he wasn't named as a suspect. Like, he's never been named as a suspect, but he is a person of interest, was a person of interest. And this sort of investigation into him was deemed a normal part of investigations, which I think is pretty understandable, like I said, like,
yeah, of course,
considering where they were found. So the police are openly looking into him. And time passes, and it's now April the 13th, so it's 2 months after the girls went missing. 500 people have been interviewed, but there is still no like named suspects in the case. And that's how it stays for a little while longer. Like, you're waiting for this to be solved, and it's just not happening. So it then becomes July. In July the 17th, a new composite sketch is released of the suspect. And the police confirm that they are acting on new information given by witnesses along the trail. So this seems to be like a man that was spotted. But this composite sketch is a little different to any that have come before. He looks a little younger. It's not like a dead ringer for what's come before. So it's definitely like new information that's come forward. The summer passes, and it is September now. Indiana State Police are contacted by the Sheriff's Department in Colorado about similarities in a case that they have against a man called Daniel Nations. And at this point, Daniel Nations is officially declared a person of interest in the case, and he's just like come from nowhere. And Colorado and like Delphi, they aren't close. I did look them up on a map. Like, nothing's close in America. It's fucking miles away. So it's not like he committed a crime in a very like small locality. But the police are like, you need to look into him. The interest in Daniel Nation was so strong because he did look like this composite sketch. He had a history of violence and sexual offences, and he was currently under investigation for killing a man on a trail in Colorado. And he did have connections to Indiana, and it's said he was likely, although I'm not sure how true that is, that he was in the area at the time. So this Daniel Nations guy remains a person of interest in the case, but he was never actually charged in relation to the Delphi investigation. It was just like a huge curveball that was thrown in there because it was somewhat similar. Although when I'm reading about it, I don't think it seems that similar. I wonder what else the police knew.
Yeah.
He attacks a man on a trail is very different to two girls.
It is. Unless he was actually identified by a witness.
Yeah.
A witness on the trail.
Being in the area or something.
Or his car, maybe.
Yeah.
There must be more to it.
Definitely. I think there's a lot of there must be more to it
for sure.
With this case.
Like we said earlier, the police have to be careful what they release, though, haven't they? Because it's a live, like, still a live investigation.
So 2017 draws to a close, and the families of Abby and Libby have, like, no progress on the case. They just feel like it's gone nowhere. And it soon became the one-year anniversary of them going missing and their murder. The police held a press conference to mark the occasion, and the reward was now at £245,000. The police had over 30,000 tapes of interview and thousands of potential suspects, and around two dozen people had been like arrested and released. And also, I found this like interesting, and I bet this happens more often than you hear about. Loads of people were actually arrested for unrelated charges based on the interviews. So they'd interview them about the Delphi murders, and something else criminal would just come out in the interview. And there was definitely a lot of work for the police force at that time coming out of these interviews, but just not on the case that they were really wanting to crack. So for a long time, things were quiet. It's still very much like it was an open case, and those tasks with solving it were so invested, but without any leads, they just weren't progressing. By the second anniversary of the girls' murder, the investigators held a press conference again to remind the public that the case is not cold, and they wanted to sort of tell the public like what type of tips might help them, and if you can look back at old diaries, see what you were doing that day. Like, they were just asking for just like anything. And a little later that year, they held another press conference to provide what investigators called significant updates on the case. So this was a big deal because they were like, we have stuff to say. And the press conference was yet another composite sketch. And this was along with a cleaned up version of the audio and a cleaned up version of the video of the suspect walking. So they'd like HD'd them. And they were super excited about this. They were like, we've got all this new stuff, like this is going to be it, this is going to be what makes a difference. But sadly, it didn't lead to the breakthrough in the case that the families and those investigating had hoped for. And the police were like, didn't know where to go with this now. Like, they thought they'd done everything and that it was going to ignite the lead that they wanted, but it just didn't. So the lead sergeant on the case actually travelled to New Orleans to take part in a panel for crime convention. And they were there just insisting that they were never going to stop talking about the girls and that they were going to keep raising awareness. And Kelsey German, the sister that had dropped them off, did a live chat during the crime convention, debunking rumours circulating on social media about her family and the girls. I just think that's so brave of her.
Oh, yeah.
She was like, I don't actually know what the rumours were that were circulating, but people talk shit. Oh, yeah. And she was just really taking the focus back, being like, good, we need her. To find my little sister, and really, like, taking the bull by the horns. I just think it's amazing that she did that. And this sort of strong intention to keep the case alive carried on, but very little seemed to be happening. It was just like a rehash of, like, we are going to find them, we could find them, but there was no actual sort of progress. This was until investigators began looking into a man called James Chadwell II. And this was after he was arrested and accused of kidnapping and beating a young girl in Lafayette, perfect. And this was approximately 27 minutes from Highbridge. In December 2021, the police appealed for information on social media for a man called Anthony Schatz in relation to the case. So there's been nothing for ages, and now there's like a few different names floating around. So this was like 2021. These names were being discussed. And whilst the names were mentioned, there wasn't any insight into the investigation that was happening. And that kind of brings me to this year. It is very clear that no one has given up on the case and that things are happening behind the scenes. What we do know is that earlier this year, the superintendent that's now working on the case publicly says that he believes the case should be solved before he retires in less than 3 years. And he said it could happen today, but we continue to move in a positive direction. So it's one of those things where you have to hope that there's more knowledge. Most recently, suspicion has fallen back onto Ron Logan, the owner of the land where the girls were found. However, Logan already died in 2020. The police have recently revealed some more details, including that the killer took, and these are like the words that were reported, a twisted souvenir from the girls, which is...
Oh, God.
Grace. And that due to a substantial amount of blood loss, the killer would have likely have had blood on their clothes and heavily covered. So, Ron Logan, we do know a little about him. We know he was like a habitual traffic offender who would serve time behind bars, but just for traffic offences. The FBI had searched his property, and they'd had to like write a warrant in order to do this, and the warrant revealed that Logan had lied about his alibi to the police, and he'd actually reached out to a family member the following morning after they went missing, so the February the 14th, to ask this family member to tell the police about a trip that they took on the previous day, and to say that he'd arrived home between 5 and 5:30, but the police have no actual evidence as to where he was at this time. He also spoke to reporters on the property days after the girl's body was found, and he told them, like, he had no idea how the girls could have physically gotten to where they were found, but that's not true. Like, it's just an incorrect thing to say, because they could have easily...
Yeah.
Got there. So it's just like he was trying to sort of obscure the sort of media interpretation of the case. And cell phone data actually revealed that Logan was definitely in the Delphi area and near Highbridge on the afternoon of the girl's disappearance. So it's not looking good for him. But Logan isn't the only suspect that persists in the case today. In March of this year, Keegan Klein, a suspected paedophile, was revealed to have talked to Libby German using a fake Instagram account. He denies murdering the girls, but he did say that his own father could be involved. So this guy was using the profile Anthony Schatz that the police asked for information on, like, the year before. And he was definitely talking to Libby. And he's, like, a grown man, like...
Yeah.
But he says that he just talked to her using this profile, but he had actually tried to arrange to meet her the day before she went missing, and that the meeting was going to happen somewhere near High Bridge. But he's like, but it didn't happen though. Exactly. Kelly's pulling her face. He then goes on to say that he shared his password to the Anthony Schatz account with his father, who he believes could have been a prime suspect for the murder. And that's all the information that's been released about him.
Wow.
But I was so thinking, like, Ron Logan, and then I've just read little bits about this Keegan Klein guy.
Yeah, Ron Logan would be my prime suspect, to be fair. But then, like you're saying, then introduce this new character.
Mm.
Changes everything, doesn't it?
It really does. It's horrible that there's so many options. Do you know what I mean? There's so many huge dangers for these two young girls who were just out having a lovely day.
It's terrifying.
It's really definitely terrifying. It's the kind of thing that makes you, like, as adults, not want to leave the house, never mind teenagers, kids. So yeah, that is sort of a big roundup of the case.
Yeah, you cover all the big points that you need to know, for sure.
Definitely. If you want a in-depth look, go to that Down the Hill podcast. Yeah. It's great. It's got the audio clips in there. It's fantastic. But Kelly, like, what do you have to add? I know you like the case, like learning about the case.
I feel like I need to read more into, what's his face?
Keegan Klein. Yeah. It's messed up. So, like, I was thinking it's definitely Ron Logan, but I wonder... Yeah. If Ron Logan, like, how physically fit was he?
Yeah, at 70.
To take on two girls.
True.
There's a lot of versions of 70, that's all I'm
exactly gonna say. Definitely. That's a really good point. And I feel like just to go back to Keegan Klein, just because he's trying to fit his father up, as it were, maybe they were both involved.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of different scenarios, and ultimately it's just terribly sad.
Definitely. I'm quite hopeful that the sheriff's department are making progress that we don't know about, because so much has been secretive. We know there's been investigations in people, we don't know what ruled them out, things like that. So yeah, they're keeping the cards close to the chest, and I hope that that's a good sign.
I always feel like that is a good sign somehow. It definitely feels like, sort of like, at any time in the near future, they will find the little piece of evidence that they need just to tie it all together.
Yeah.
And I really hope that happens.
There's quite a few cases that I feel that way about.
Yeah.
I'm like, at some point, there's going to be a breakthrough, and I'm going to be so happy, relieved for the families.
Oh, definitely.
But this is definitely one of them.
Yeah. I think they just... Obviously, we never knew them, and we never will, you know. But when you look at sort of like clips of them together, and you hear about them, they just seem like the sweetest little girls.
Yeah. I do think that contributed towards the huge amount of press attention as well,
of course,
because they are your idyllic like all American girls.
Definitely. Well, thanks for covering that. Super interesting. And as always, we'll put all the sources in the usual places so everyone can check it out, check out the podcast, etc. I did want to mention about sort of go way back to our first ever episode, Charlene Downs. Have you, perchance, been in our favourite group recently?
I've seen there's a lot of stuff going on. They've reopened
There is.
Looking into the case, haven't they?
Yeah, so Renee, who runs the group predominantly and does a lot of hard work for the group and is a really lovely lady, actually, she has managed, through all this hard work, to get a lady called Jen Jarvie to actively investigate Charlene.
Yeah, she's a private investigator.
She is, and she's had, again, I'll put this in the links, but she's had some success with other cold cases. So the group have got Jen on board, and she has very kindly offered to get the photograph analysed and to really look into, well, she's not going to analyse the photo, but she's, helped organise someone to do a professional analysis on the photo stuff. But aside from that, she's actually going to be going to Blackpool to do some investigations and interviews. So, yeah, a lot of interesting stuff there. There is a crowdfunder going at the moment.
Yeah.
To help with expenses and stuff. Initially it was for the analysis, but now it's expanded to incorporate some expenses for Jen. But whether you're in the group or not, it's worth looking at. I think it's a great group. I think there's a lot of good information that comes in there, and Renee's great and does some really good lives. I just think, again, though, it's another case, a young girl, there's so many scenarios, so many rumours
circulating
around
versions of what could have happened to her.
Absolutely.
All of them are horrendous, but it's knowing what really did happen.
Yeah, so that's good that that's getting some more attention. It's already been in quite a few papers that it's been looked at. So, yeah, I also want to say thank you to the listeners that I've got in touch in our absence. It's been lovely to hear from you. Thank you for your emails and messages. And hopefully we won't leave it as long next time before we come back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. All right, guys. I hope you're keeping well, and we will see you next week.
We will.
Bye.
Bye.